This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loans Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, that's right. Welcome inside the Quicken Loans Studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And in our very first segment tonight, you know what? It is time, long overdue, we're going to catch up with a senior writer with OU Insider, the one and only James Hale. We are ready to preview the Oklahoma Sooners, their 2017 spring football. And I tell you what, good news if you are a Sooner fan, because last time James was on the show, we talked about how the Sooners secured a top five recruiting class on National Signing Day. They had an offensive overhaul. We're going to get all the latest scoop. Good to have back with us, James Hale.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Listen, as I said, you know, the last time we were on the show, we focused a lot on things offensively for the Sooners. They had an incredible recruiting class, the best in the Big 12 Conference. But one of the biggest storylines coming into spring practice is defensively this new look. What do you think ultimately this is going to mean for Oklahoma?
It means it'll be more multiple. What Mike has always thought going against the high-powered offenses in the conference, yet and against non-conference opponents and have a little style of play that they needed to be multiple up front. He also wants to do that because teams are going so fast-paced that he wants that quarterback to have that split second where he looks out there and he says, whoops, I don't recognize that number or I don't recognize that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get multiple and be able to do that, so they want to base out of a four-man front. They have been basing out of a three-man front. They want to base out of a four-man front because they feel like just with their basic front out of a four-man, if they get the four right guys, they can put pressure without having to do anything else. I think over the last couple of years, they've had to blitz linebackers and things to get the kind of pressure that they want. Lining up in a four-man front allows them to line up in gaps sometimes, not right up on somebody sometimes. And they're recruiting to that personnel that they can run both the 4-3 and the 3-4. So multiple or multiplicity is kind of the word at OU this year, as they try to get more multiple up front to be able to line up and try to confuse that quarterback and get more pressure on the quarterback and on the offensive team.
Okay, so James, you're breaking down the X's and O's defensively, the 4-3 look. So is it ultimately just all about creating pressure on the quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is because, the Big 12 is a pass-happy league.
Right.
Look at Oklahoma State's offense with their great receivers and Randolph and what Tech tries to do.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, Texas, it's hard to get a handle, but we know what Herman did at Houston. I think he's going to have a better quarterback there than he currently has at Texas, even though I like Bouchel and think he's a good player if Herman decides to go that route. But now Kansas State's the one team that will run the ball more at you in the quarterback run game, but still in a four-man front. With the quarterback run game, Oklahoma feels like they can fill the gaps better and keep that quarterback at bay. So, when you've got Ohio State on your schedule with Barrett as their quarterback, and that's your second game of the year, you prepare for that, and so you start thinking about how do we counter that. Oklahoma saw them last year and got burned on three straight touchdowns as one position, the right cornerback's position, got burned every time. Once Jordan Parker settled in there, that position became more solid, and he's back this year. Thomas is back. Stephen Parker will not go through spring because of a shoulder injury, but he's back. And then Will Sunderland fits in there at that safety spot. So how do you combat all these different styles of offense? And this is what, in my opinion, makes college football even better than the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL's kind of, whatever the next guy's doing, we're going to do it too. The quarterback run game has become into play, but Cam's hurt and Kaepernick's now. It doesn't look like the same quarterback that he was. So, you get into this, some of these angles. Still that passing quarterback, that quarterback that's running that, one-back formation, the Bradys, the Rodgers, those people, they're still operating out of a throwing offense, right? So in the college game, the running game seems to be just as in vogue. But Clemson just won the national title with a multiple quarterback that can do a lot of things. What bothered him the most? Defenses that could be multiple and caused Tayshaun to think a little bit. And, so that's what Oklahoma's going to try to do on defense. It's as much as to confuse, to try to take away some of the tempo and to, get pressure on that quarterback and change that line of scrimmage.
Okay, so does Oklahoma have the player personnel to be able to throw those multiple looks? Talk to me about the linebacker position.
Well, linebackers, it's a reboot, so to speak. Jordan Evans graduates. You've got Emmanuel Beal back at 214 pounds. Again, he's unique. He's undersized. He's not exactly what you're looking for, but, he's the starter at that inside backer position. Now, who's going to replace Jordan Evans, who started for 3 years?
Right.
John Michael Terrell, he's a redshirt freshman. He's 243 pounds, track guy. Looks tailor-made to be a guy that would be there. They've moved Ricky DeBerry inside at 244. Capri Doucette has moved inside at 220. Then you have Levi Draper, the celebrated high school All-American out of Collinsville, Oklahoma, that checked in early. So he's going through workouts at 218. All these guys are better prepared to start their career at linebacker than what they had with Dominique Alexander, who's now in the NFL, and Jordan Evans, who soon will be in the NFL. Both Jordan and Dominique came in as pass-rushing defensive ends out of high school, kick returners, offensive guys that OU converted to inside backer. All these players I mentioned have played inside backer before, including Curtis Bolton, who's now a junior. So the competition's intense, but they've got guys that look like they're ready to play. Now, they have a star, a budding star in Caleb Kelly, who will take on more responsibility, maybe learn another linebacking position, because they never want him to leave the field. He has been the guy that's been coming off when they go to multiple DBs. They want him to be on the field all the time. And then you have Obo, who is a senior now. I think he'll be one of the top three or four pass rushers in college football. He's also sitting out most of the spring with a shoulder repair, but he'll be ready to go. And in that four-man front, he'll just become a weak side defensive end. Like Von Miller, that would be a good comparison. Yeah, and Oklahoma hopes he becomes Von Miller.
Yeah.
That's kind of the style of how he'll play. And Oklahoma's recruiting to that with Addison Gums and Kenneth Murray and some other guys and Jakari Daly coming out of Florida. You know, those guys kind of are pass rushers that Oklahoma wants to look at that jack or weak side defensive end position.
He knows his stuff, the senior writer with OU Insider. You can also listen to him at 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. James Hale with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us at eRadio Sports. And James, where can our fans connect with you?
OUinsider.com of the 247 Network. I'm Jay Hale, 24 on Twitter. And, of course, you can always listen to us at sportstalk1400.com.
Okay, so we've talked about Oklahoma's defense. Let's shine the spotlight now on their offense. Quarterback Baker Mayfield, he hit a bit of a speed bump in the offseason. So kind of talk to me. I know that you spent a lot of time around Baker.
What did he do? I'm just curious.
Why don't you enlighten us, my dear?
Yeah, well, Baker Mayfield can quarterback for me anytime. That's something that you wish didn't happen for him. It's embarrassing for him more than anything. The jokes about being tackled by a quarterback, Barry Switzer's jokes and things like that. So, you have some of those issues that you have to deal with, and it's unfortunate this happened for him. But if you were a business person and you watched him meet with the media yesterday, you would try to hire him right away. I say let's let Baker run for president someday. I mean, he's made mistakes, but he would handle things very smoothly in whatever he got into. He was very good with the media, took total responsibility, laughed at himself, laughed at some of the jokes that's being said about him. And without question, he's still the leader of that football team, and he's the reason why Oklahoma's got a chance to be a great team. When you have a great quarterback,
yes,
a top three or four quarterback that can win any game that he's in, no matter what's happening around him, you've got a chance to be a good team. And if you don't have Baker, this team is not special. You have Baker, it's got a chance to be special. And he owned up to everything yesterday. And they're not going to let this hurt the football team. And Baker's not going to let this hurt the football team. So they'll put it behind him. I don't know what the penalty's going to be. It's going to be something off-season, though. And he'll be ready to go against UTEP.
Okay, we've only got about one more minute. I can certainly be a lot more forgiving to Baker Mayfield in terms of his transgressions, but I'm sure I can't get that video out of my mind about Joe Mixon. So what's his future in terms of with the NFL?
Don't you? All I hear is he's going to be a high draft. Look, the NFL is such a big business. And if you knew Joe, if you got to know Joe, after that incident, you would realize that's a split-second mistake. It's never going to happen again. Joe's a great teammate. He's been a good student. He's been good in society out here. He's, you know, he's handled himself very well. From what I understand, he's blowing up every one of these meetings. And you can't mistake his talent. He's just a great football player. And the NFL's just win, baby. And they are going to take him because he can help them win football games. Somebody's going to take him in the high second round. And he'll go in the first round if there's not that unwritten law that they don't want a guy that's had that discretion before in the first round.
Check him out, senior writer at OU Insider, OUinsider.com. My friend, James Hale, thank you so much. What a great way to kick off our program tonight. We appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, E. Appreciate you.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio and the Big E Sports.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome in to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And right now, we're going to completely shift gears. We opened up talking some college football. We're going to tee it up. We're going to go inside the ropes with some PGA news and notes. And that is Mark Leishman, of course, wins the 2017 Arnold Palmer Invitational after holing that 50-foot eagle putt on 16 to take the lead. And with his big win, guess what? He earned a trip to the Masters, also a three-year exemption on the PGA Tour. And our next guest, he was there calling the shots. He is with Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio, always a Big E favorite. That is Bill Rosinski. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, Alyssa. Always fun to be on with you. And don't forget, Mark Leishman got a red cardigan sweater to wear.
Yes, and you asked him prior to the tournament if he even had one in his closet, in his wardrobe, and I guess he didn't, right?
No, I think if you ask most of the PGA Tour players if they had any kind of cardigan in their closet, they would probably say no, but everybody who was there last week was hoping to get that one because it was very special being the first. And it was that eagle putt was unbelievable. I was actually with the group behind him because I was with Charlie Hoffman. And, you know, Charlie was trying to make a charge. And the big roar went up. So great for him. He's a fun story. And obviously he went through all the issues with his wife a couple of years ago.
Right.
And back in the win column. So that was a super story.
You know, let's talk some more about the Arnold Palmer tournament. What was it like for you to be there at Bay Hill for the first time without the legend?
It was sad to some extent because, you know, I'm in my 60s, and I grew up a fan of Arnie. I always tell people that my dad put a golf club in my hand because he really enjoyed the sport, taught me the game of golf. Arnie was the guy who got me to watch it on television. I remember in the early 60s watching him win Masters and lose Masters. And, you know, sometimes following Arnie, you know, the agony was as good as the ecstasy because he tried so hard to win, you know, blowing some I remember the U.S. Open he lost to be at a huge lead over Billy Casper, ended up losing in a playoff. The Masters that he lost in 61, I was crying my eyeballs out when Gary Player beat him. He took a double bogey on the last hole. So for me, and I've covered that tournament 4 or 5 years when he was there, to not having there was the sad part of it, but they did a really nice job, Alyssa, of incorporating his memory throughout the golf course. They, of course, had the big statue, which they unveiled. It's a 13-foot statue of him swinging a golf club. And then throughout the golf, on the practice range, they had a bag of his set up and an umbrella where he would normally go to hit balls. Because this is his club. This is Bay Hill. He invested in this and got it back in, I think, 78 or 79. So he had an office there, and so they had that for the fans. They could see out on the 16th tee box. They had his cart with his golf bag on it because he used to sit out there and watch the players and communicate with them and watch the tournament from the 16th tee. They had his locker as it was, and I think the coolest part, and a lot of the fans couldn't see this, but on the second floor at Bay Hill in the clubhouse, on the second floor was his office, and they left it as is. His office is exactly as it was. The day he passed away in September, the only thing they don't have anymore is he had stacks of fan mail that he always answered, and the club went about answering those letters and cards after he passed away, sending their regrets that since he passed away they couldn't give you his autograph. But it was really cool. The players got a chance to listen to walk in his office, sit in his chair, and kind of imagine themselves being the king for a couple of minutes, which was pretty cool.
Arnold Palmer was simply the best. No one like him, a true champion, pure class. What comes to your mind when you think of him? And
Arnie was still a guy. When you walked in the clubhouse, if you walked in the dining room, take your hat off. How many times you walk in a clubhouse now,
oh,
taking
that.
Their hat off?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I mean, he was just that way. He was so charismatic. And he was a course designer. He did so much for the game outside the sport. But as far as the sport is concerned itself, he knew that the fans made it the most important thing. And he was always, and whenever you talk to anybody about meeting Arnie, even if they just met him once, it was that look that he gave you in your eye and that told you that at least at that moment, you were the most important person he was going to be with. Mark McCumber told a great story on our broadcast last week. Mark was a little kid when Arnie was playing in a charity event. And Mark said he followed Arnie around the golf course and was, tugging at his pants. And, Arnie was playing. All these fans were out
mm-hmm.
there. And then he asked Arnie for a golf ball. And Arnie said, after the round's over with, I'll sign a golf ball and give it to you. Finishes 18 holes. He's mobbed by the fans. He's signing autographs. He's signing golf balls. As finally, his caddy looks at him and says, Arnie, we're out of balls. So Arnie goes, okay, folks, I'm done. So Mark is, devastated. Mark McCumber said he turned and he just started walking away. He said, well, Arnie ran out of golf balls. I'm not going to go. So he said he got about 50 yards away, and he hears this voice going, hey, kid. And it was Arnie. And he goes, where are you going? And McCumber said, well, your caddy said you're out of golf balls, and, I just decided. And he says, kid, come here. And he had a signed golf ball for him. And gave it to him. And I think that exemplifies what Arnie was all about.
Bill Rozinski with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is with SiriusXM PGA Radio. And, of course, we are celebrating Arnold Palmer, the big golf tournament from last weekend. And really just that story that you shared, it just really kind of helps us understand why Arnold Palmer was so popular and that special connection that he had with his fans. I mean, it was one thing to have so much success on the course, seven majors and winning 62 PGA events, but just his awareness of his fans and making each and every person that he encountered feel special.
Yeah, and he did all the old Hertz advertisements, and of course, Alyssa, I'm sure you've had an Arnold Palmer before.
Of course, yes.
a little tea and lemonade.
Sure.
I mean, that name is going to that'll stick with us for uh-huh. forever. And he was just he was bigger than the game, because the game always came first to him. But he was, such an ambassador for the sport and beloved by so many people. You just never heard anybody say anything bad about Arnie. And he had those great duels with Nicklaus back in the 60s. And that's what I'll remember most about Arnie. And because when I was a little kid, I loved Arnie. I hated Jack. Now, I've grown to really like Jack Nicklaus over the years. I've met him. I've interviewed him. Jack Nicklaus is a gentleman. Now, the thing I hope is that, when Byron Nelson passed away, all of a sudden that tournament over the last few years, you wonder how long these events can last, because the guy whose name is on it is not there anymore. And I think with the relationship that Arnie had with the players, that stop at Bay Hill will always be on the tour map for mm-hmm. at least the next, maybe 15, 20 years. You wonder about the future of a tournament like that, but I think right now it's in good hands.
Doesn't the PGA, they need to kind of fit perhaps a more accessible date, because there were so many of the big-name golfers that had to skip the Arnold Palmer Invitational?
Yeah, because you've got the WGC event before it.
Right.
You've got, the match play, which is going on this week, and then you're not too far from the Masters, and Jordan Spieth didn't play. Justin Thomas did not play this past year. Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson didn't play. So, I think we in our production meeting on Wednesday, we talked about, we can mention who's not here, but let's mention the guys who are here. And it was a pretty good, I think there were 14 of the top 25 in the world were there, including, Rory. And, it was a good field. It was, it was an exciting tournament that came down to the last couple of holes. And, Tiger's, if we ever get Tiger back out
yeah.
there, he's won it 8 times, who knows? So I think the tournament's in good shape.
It's XM PGA Radio. You're listening to the voice of Bill Rozinski. Always a true pleasure. Thank you so much for carving out some time. I wish we had more time to talk some more about the game of golf. We'll catch up soon.
All right, Alyssa, thanks. Anytime.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. That's right. Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle coming up next.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and although March Madness is well underway, it is not exclusive to college basketball. That's because the NBA playoffs are just around the corner, and one of the teams that are trying to clinch a playoff berth is the Dallas Mavericks. Always a pleasure to be alongside the Dallas Mavericks head coach, and that is Rick Carlisle. We've missed you. Good to have you back on the show.
Nice to be back.
Okay, so April 15th, the NBA playoffs will get underway. You have 11 games left in the regular season. What is your message to your team and the mindset that you want them to have?
Well, we're still hanging in there. Mathematically, we have a chance. We've got a home schedule this week, which is extremely important. The message is, you know, stay with it. Keep fighting hard. Keep working together. This is a very difficult week. You know, the game against the Warriors last night was rough. I mean, they're obviously a great team. Then we got Clippers, Toronto, and Oklahoma, and all those teams are firmly in the playoffs, and some of them are top teams. So we got our work cut out for us, but it can be done.
You're talking about elite teams that you've had to face this week: Golden State, the Clippers Thursday night, in Toronto on Saturday, and Oklahoma City on Monday. Talk to me about where you guys are defensively, because when you look at those teams, they can really fire up some numbers from the perimeter. They are an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah, and, you know, over the last couple of months, our defense has been much improved. Took a step back in the Warriors game. You know, our transition defense was not good. A lot of that had to do with them and how good they are, and you know, the fact that we weren't making shots. You know, one of the things that you've got to do in the NBA is get the ball in the basket a little bit. And we had some good shots that didn't go in. But, you know, when that happens, we got to keep playing. And we had struggles in that area last night. Clippers are, you know, a high-quality team. You know, you're talking Chris Paul. You're talking Griffin. You're talking Redick. You know, DeAndre Jordan. These guys are all high-level players. And so, again, it's going to be sticking to the details, and transition defense has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. You talk about Golden State, but I think a week ago with you on that East Coast road trip, and you guys let one get away against Philadelphia, that 42-point loss, but you had the sweet bounce back.
I wouldn't call it letting one get away. I'd call it a wipeout.
Okay.
I mean, letting one get away is when you lose it at the very end. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what happened.
I stand corrected.
That was a no-show. And, and you know, credit Philadelphia. They're one of the hardest-playing teams in the league, and we just weren't ready that night. But we did bounce back against Brooklyn, as you mentioned. But, you know, bouncing back against the worst team in the league record-wise is you know, should be expected in the position that we're in. And then you play the best team in the league record-wise the following game, and then, you know, that didn't go so well. So we got to get the wheels back on the wagon here and keep pushing.
Well, that bounce-back game against Brooklyn, I wanted to point out the play and production of J.J. Barea. He had 20 points, 11 in the fourth quarter, really brought that energy and that effort. And when you look at this roster, you've got Dirk, you've got Devin, you've got J.J. That's your big three in terms of veteran players. Do you look to them to get that message across about having this younger players, having them ready to play each and every night? So there's not a letdown, what we were talking about.
Yeah, you know, those three guys are extremely important. You know, Wes Matthews is another veteran guy. You know, Barnes has been our best player all year, and I put him in that group too, even though he's 24. He plays more mature brand of basketball, and he's just a mature guy. So, look, our veteran leaders have got to help us. You know, I've got to do a good job of conveying and communicating our ultimate messages every single day. And again, you know, with 11 or 12 games left, whatever it is, time is short. Time is of the essence, and you know, we've got to make up ground here, particularly in our home court.
Well, the NBA season is an 82-game grind. It's very intense. It can tax you physically, mentally, emotionally. What kind of things do you do to make sure that you're getting a max effort from your players each and every night? Because as a coach, it's one thing to communicate, but how do you connect? How do you bring that spark so that, you know, they can take it to another level? Do you change your temperament?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, different situations call for different action, but it's important to have a deep roster, in today's NBA. Teams are playing 9, 10, sometimes 11 players very consistently. So, you know, having depth builds in accountability. If guys aren't getting the job done, there's somebody coming in that presumably can. And so we make it competitive. You know, we don't just farm out minutes to guys just because they're veterans or anything like that. You got to play and produce. And the depth of our roster, I do think, is something that's kind of gotten us back into the playoff hunt over the last couple months.
One of the big storylines this past week was the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, sent out the memo to all 30 owners in the NBA in regards to resting players. Would you mind just giving us your stance, your posture on that?
Well, I understand both sides of it. And, you know, as a coach in this league for many years now, as the season wears on, you get a very keen sense for your players' energy levels, you know, their emotional sort of capacities. And there are some times when a strategic rest for a game can be a very helpful thing. The counter argument is, hey, you know, these are NBA players. They're all under contract. They're all getting paid. Fans show up to see them play. And that's certainly a very valid argument. One thing that's happened in the new CBA that I think will alleviate some of this is there's going to be a reduction in exhibition games. The actual season will start a little earlier, which will probably reduce back-to-backs by a couple or three, which is pretty significant. And then I think there's probably going to be some rules put in place about resting players, particularly for the national TV games. You know, those are the ones that are raising the biggest stink, and understandably so.
You know, when we step back and we look at the season, how it has played out, you guys got off to a tough start. And then, of course, the month of November was brutal, dealing with all the different injuries. But if you're a Mavericks fan, you've got to be really excited about the future. The players that you have put in position, you, Mark, and Donnie, with some of them that you were just highlighting, talking about Wesley and Harrison and Seth and Nico. I don't know who I'm forgetting, Nerlens Noel. The future is bright, and hope can be a beautiful thing going forward.
Well, we've made a lot of positive steps, even though it's been a difficult year. When you start 2-13, the way we did, you know, at that point in time, that 15 games was by far the hardest schedule anybody in the league played. And so, you know, with our situation with some guys banged up, it was difficult. But a lot of young guys got some very important experience. You know, Finney Smith got into the rotation, ended up starting a lot of games. You know, Barnes became the guy that had to produce throughout the games and at the end of games. Seth Curry's gotten a lot of experience. You know, a lot of our other younger guys got time. And so even though we were losing, there were some positive things that did happen. And so looking at the season, you know, kind of big picture, you know, the Noel trade is something that we really like for our team. We needed a tall, angular, rim threat type guy. He's done a nice job, and I think at age 22, he's going to get better and better. You know, Yogi's had some explosive games. Seth has had a terrific year. Barnes will be heavily in the conversation for most improved player. Finney Smith, I think, when it's all said and done, is going to be viewed as a guy that should have been taking the top 15 picks in the draft last year. And Brasino, you know, had the big game in Washington last week where, you know, with Matthews sitting out, we needed an extra guy to stick in the rotation. And he had 9 rebounds, banged in 3 threes and a big putback at one point and really helped us win the game. So, you know, he's another guy we really like. And I haven't even mentioned, you know, Powell and Mejri have both been contributors this year. Those guys are relatively young too. So, you know, the future looks good, and we're going to have to continue building this team. We're going to have to continue developing players, and in free agency, we're going to have to make the right kinds of moves. I don't know that there's going to be that real big fish this year, but we're going to have to find guys like Seth Curry, like Harrison Barnes, that are young, that have some experience, but still have an upside and can grow into guys that can be big-time contributors.
Our exclusive interview with the Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle will continue after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. And before we continue our conversation with the Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle, we would love to hear from you. That's right. The playoffs are just around the corner. Give us your thoughts. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. And you can go back and listen to this exclusive interview at podcastarena.com. Let's rejoin Rick Carlisle, the Dallas Mavericks head coach.
Well, dramatic change certainly took place with your roster. But I have to wonder, all the years as you've been a head coach in the NBA, how difficult is it to say goodbye to players that are very meaningful to you personally and professionally? I think of Deron Williams and even Justin Anderson. How hard was it for you to say goodbye to them?
Well, you know, I've got relationships with those guys, friendships with those guys on the one hand. On the other hand, this is a dynamic business that, you know, and we know when we get into this, there's going to be some difficult decisions that are made either about our futures or about players that we like. If you want to get a player like Nerlens Noel, who is, you know, a guy that can be a starting caliber player for you in your future, you're going to have to give up a good player, you know? The situation with Deron and Bogut was a little bit different. You know, there were trades available for those guys, but, you know, Mark really felt like the best thing and the right thing by them was to let them go so that they could choose where they went. And so, you know, it was really a gesture of respect to those guys, and I think it was the right thing, too. And now, you know, our nucleus has gotten a little younger with Yogi, who we talked about, with Noel, who we talked about, some of these other younger guys. And, you know, with 11 or 12 games left, you know, we've still got some time to make some big-time progress.
You got a young, fresh roster, but speaking of goodbye, do you think ahead, like, how difficult will that be when Dirk decides to finally hang it up?
I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about that. But I'm pretty certain at this point in time that he's planning to play next year. And then, you know, my guess, and this is something you'd have to ask him, my guess is that he'll go year to year and just see how he feels, you know. And, you know, it's been an unbelievable run for him. It's been just an amazing, amazing career, you know, 19 years. It'll be 20 next year. He'll only be the second player all time that's been 20 years with one franchise. You know, Kobe Bryant did it with the Lakers. And so, you know, we're hoping that that'll happen and that he can stay healthy next year. And, hey, he's got a chance, if he stays healthy, to knock off Will Chamberlain at number five on the all-time scoring list. You know, just think about the kind of impact that would have in the history of the game. But, you know, what a great player, what a phenomenal person. And the Dallas sports culture, I mean, you know, he's in that pantheon of all-time super greats, you know, Staubach, Aikman, Emmitt Smith, you know, Madonna, all those guys. He's right up there carved on the mountainside, too.
Opening night of the NBA featured 114 international players from 42 different countries. Do you think about, you know, the type of influence that Dirk has had on them in terms of inspiring them and perhaps them wanting to pattern their game after him and having that type of longevity, as you were just talking about, 19 years with the same franchise? That is remarkable.
I agree. And, look, he's changed the game in so many ways. From the position, you know, really establishing the stretch four as, you know, an everyday position in this league, to the impact he's had on the international side. Because when a guy like that has that kind of success, you know, decision makers in our league are going to spend more time scouting Europe and the international countries as well.
Okay, we're getting ready to wrap up our time with Rick Carlisle. Give me a quick hit. Last question on Harrison Barnes. As you were talking about, perhaps he may be one of the most improved players this year in the league, has exceeded expectations. Why do you think, Rick, that he has thrived in your system?
Well, early on, you know, I should start over. To start the year, he was projected as our starting three-man. When Dirk got banged up, it put him right at the four, where he has a quickness advantage and a skill advantage on offense. It was going to make it a little harder on defense for him with the rebounding responsibilities and so forth. But, you know, early on, he took the reins of the team, and we basically plugged him into Dirk's spot. And he took the opportunity and ran with it. And he gained amazing amount of experience as a go-to guy and as a, you know, quote, best player on the team kind of guy. And, you know, he's grown so much this year. You know, he'll be heavily in the conversation for most improved, along with, you know, many other guys. You know, Jokic, Adetokunbo in Milwaukee. Seth Curry's gotten way better, too, you know, and there's others.
Always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Coach. Good luck with the remainder of the schedule, and hope you make it to the NBA playoffs.
Thank you.
Stick around. Always the biggest and the best right here at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio and the Big East Sports Show.